Mary Margaret Gleason, MD, FAAP, is a pediatrician, psychiatrist, and child psychiatrist at Tulane University School of Medicine. She is a member of the AAP Committee on Early Childhood. Dr. Gleason, when you talk about mental health in infants and toddlers, what does that mean?
When we talk about infant mental health, we're talking about the emotional, behavioral, and relationship well-being of infants and toddlers, really as they develop within the context of their caregiving relationships with their parents or other important adults. The most central focus of infant mental health really is the attention to that caregiving relationship, because the quality of that relationship can have profound influences on really all domains of a child's development, from learning to social skills and mental health issues down the line. A parent-child relationship that's healthy can serve as a buffer against threats to a child development, violence, exposure, poverty, whereas a relationship that is challenging and doesn't meet a child's needs can sometimes exacerbate either social or genetic risks to a child's development and well-being. When we talk about infant mental health as a specialty, the field is really a collaborative, interdisciplinary specialty of mental health providers, pediatricians, occupational and speech therapists, and child psychiatrists. So it's really a group of professionals focused on children's well-being.
You brought up what can happen if an infant or toddler does not have early healthy relationships. Can you expand a little bit more on that?
So healthy relationships really provide opportunities for children to learn about the world around them, to experience opportunities to handle difficult emotions or frustrations, and to start to learn to anticipate and recognize other people's behaviors and emotions. And I think it's important to say that the vast majority of children do experience the kinds of relationships that provide these opportunities, and that healthy development doesn't depend on, quote, perfect parenting. On the other hand, if a child doesn't have a safe, predictable, nurturing relationship with at least one or a handful of important caregivers, parents, grandparents, childcare providers, they really are at risk for problems with their mental health, with organizing their emotional responses to events, with learning, and even with difficult behaviors down the line. What we know from research in attachment is that children who have disorganized attachment relationships, relationships where they don't seem to have a clear pattern for getting comfort from their parent when they're upset, those children are at the highest risk of developing mental health problems. And those problems can be disruptive behavior disorders. They can be dissociation, in which a child seems to sort of disappear from their body, sort of spaces out for a period of time. We know that early childhood disruptive behaviors, for example, can interfere with having the chance to experience developmentally typical experiences, like interacting with other children, either in the family or in childcare settings. And then there can be a ripple effect, putting the child behind in terms of other typical experiences that they should have to learn to develop in all of their domains.
Can you give some ways that parents can nurture their young child's emotional development and mental health?
Absolutely. The parents can nurture their child's emotional development by creating a safe, consistent environment. Specifically, first, that means making sure that the child knows that he or she is protected, both physically and emotionally, and that she's had enough experiences to know that she or he can count on her parent to protect her from dangers and can count on her parent to successfully comfort her in times of distress. What that means for very young children is responding to their signs of distress. We know that very young infants can't be spoiled, and so responding to their signals that they need some comforting, they need some help, is an important way of starting to build a child's confidence that their caregiver is there to look out for them. Other things that parents can do is making sure that they interact with their child. So that means talking to their child, making eye contact. From the day the infant is born, that can be during play, during tummy time, for example, parent and child on the floor, facing each other, looking at the same things, looking at each other, and can also be incredibly valuable during necessary activities, even like diaper changes. Early on, parents can also follow their infant's gaze to get a sense of what's interesting my child. When it's appropriate, let the child explore that thing. So bring the the object that the child's looking at closer so that she or he can touch it, taste it, feel it, explore it in the ways that infants do. The other really valuable time for parents and children to start to develop joy together and get to know each other is during feeding. So it's an opportunity for shared attention, making eye contact, delighting in a child's exploration of how things taste, how they feel, and giving the child opportunities for starting to make sounds or talking to the parent. There's a group called the Circle of Security that I think has done a really nice job in conceptualizing what very young children need. And they've put together, I think, brilliant 25-word guide for parents, and I'll share it with you. It's always be bigger, stronger, wiser, and kind. Whenever possible, follow your child's need. And whenever necessary, take charge. And I think that their 25-word guidance really emphasizes how important it is to have a foundation of positive interactions with a child and then fewer and fewer of the times when the parent takes over, takes charge, and interrupts the child's play.
Is that specifically for toddlers, or is that for all ages of children?
They've developed it for younger children, focusing on building an attachment relationship, but I think it actually is something that can be applied to almost every relationship. The foundation of parent-child relationship needs to be that the child counts on the parent to be available, to have wisdom and the ability to protect, but always to be kind. And the rest of the relationship builds off of that foundation.
Doctor, can you talk a little bit about colic? How does that play into the development of a child's emotional health in those early relationships?
First off, we know that colic is not something that comes from a problem with a parent-child relationship, but certainly the experience of having a baby who's difficult to soothe, who spends hours a day crying, and for whom parents and children both experience sleep deprivation, this set of experiences really can be a challenge for families. One of the things that is important to keep in mind is that parents who have infants with colic really benefit from having support from other people so that they can take a time out, take care of themselves, get refueled either by sleep or by going out of the house, making sure that they are meeting their own needs as well as trying to meet the needs of an infant who seems to be difficult to soothe.
Can you talk a little bit about separation anxiety? What is it coming from, and what advice do you have for parents?
Stranger anxiety and separation protest are normal developmental events that typically present around 7 to 9 months, and they can persist for a few months. Really, what these behaviors signal is a time when a child starts to develop a focused attachment relationship with the caregiver. So they start to use that caregiver selectively for comfort and protection. If parents think back to the months before the stranger anxiety starts or the separation protests start, 6-month-old babies, 5-month-old babies can be passed around at family events and they're perfectly happy and will coo at everyone. What happens in the 7 to 9 month period is that the child starts to really say, I need to use my special person when I'm feeling distressed, and that special person makes me feel safe. The sign that the child is developing this attachment relationship right on time. And also that the child's earlier experiences have really taught her that the parent is available and is the go-to person and is the person you can count on for nurturing and comfort and protection.
So what should a parent do when their 7th-month-old is clinging to them and they need to drop them off at daycare?
There are a couple things. The first is for parents to reassure themselves that this is not a sign of a problem, that this is a healthy response. The second thing is to reassure themselves that they're dropping their child off somewhere that they have decided is a safe place for them. Over time, the child will experience that place as a safe place, and that the distress that the child's showing is just a sign that the child recognizes the parent is the safe go-to person and that this is a new place. Parents should be reassuring to their child, should not spend extended periods of time trying to beg or cajole the child into staying, but should be very clear about being back when they plan to be back. The child starts to experience the pattern of being left, for example, at a childcare setting and being picked up, and that their go-to person always comes back.
Let's talk a little bit about temper tantrums. What's behind them? How should parents handle them, and when do they end?
Temper tantrums can be signs of all kinds of things, but for the most part, it's important to keep in mind that very young children have very few ways of expressing their distress. So many forms of distress present as yelling, screaming, kicking, falling down on the floor as temper tantrums. For the most part, what a tantrum is a sign that the child doesn't have the language skills or the skills to organize their feelings or the ability to inhibit their impulse in a calm way. That is, that the child's right on track developmentally. Often temper tantrums will be more frequent when a child's tired or hungry. And if we think about it, that's just like adult behavior. The hardest thing to do, but probably the most important thing when a child's having a tantrum, is to remain calm. Children need to learn to organize their emotional reactions, and that's harder to do if the adults around them aren't doing that either. With infants and toddlers, distracting a child with some other activity or some other toy is a very appropriate way to redirect a young child's attention away from whatever was causing their distress. And that can teach them that they can move on and don't need to get stuck on just one thing that made them upset. For older children, it's also appropriate to ignore the behavior, especially for mild disruptive behaviors. And most importantly, not to reinforce the tantrum. So not giving the child what they're tantruming for, but also not to laugh at them and not to taunt at them. As children get older, 2.5 or 3, using timeout is also useful. And that needs to be done in a very consistent, boring, unemotional way so that the child knows that that's a way of reorganizing their feelings. There are also things that parents can do to try to prevent the more extreme kinds of temper tantrums. They can praise positive behaviors whenever they see them. If a child tolerates something that might be frustrating without having a tantrum, that's a great opportunity to make a big deal about it so the child knows that's the kind of behavior the parent wants to keep seeing. Certainly, trying to avoid difficult experiences like shopping when a child's tired or hungry can reduce the number of temper tantrums in a family's life. And early on, parents can start by giving children 2 acceptable options whenever possible. So, for example, do you want the apple juice in your red cup or your blue cup? Both are fine, and it starts to give the children a sense that they have some choices in their life and that they can make decisions. And lastly, it's useful to keep the home environment as safe as possible physically so a child can explore their home without lots of limit setting that might set them up for difficult interactions.
What behaviors in infants and toddlers may indicate an emotional or mental health problem?
So when we look for behaviors that might be a red flag for emotional or mental health problems, there are a couple of different categories. First, as we were just talking about temper tantrums, research shows that extreme, prolonged, repetitive, or dangerous temper tantrums can be associated with mental health problems, and those deserve some more attention. We also pay attention to children who don't seem to use their parents as a source of comfort when they're distressed, or even if they are in their parents' arms, are really difficult to soothe. These children may be showing us that they don't have a picture in their mind of their parent or caregiver as someone who's going to be able to keep them safe or comfort them. On the opposite end of that spectrum, pay attention to children who don't use their caregiver, their parent, when they're in new situations. Children who are overly friendly, extremely sociable, especially children who have already had traumatic experiences or neglectful experiences in their life, so children who may have been in an institution and now adopted, or children who may have had other difficult caregiving experiences. In terms of thinking about emotions, one of the important things that we always think about with young children is joyfulness. If we see a child who really just doesn't seem to enjoy anything, doesn't show excitement with exploring new toys, doesn't show joy when interacting with other people, that's a sign that we need to pay attention to and explore a little bit further in terms of whether they're able to do that. two other things we look for are extreme fearfulness, so fearfulness that interferes with having experiences that would be typical for the child, so that interfere with, for example, participating in family gatherings, or that are so extreme that the parent can't keep a job because the child can't go to childcare. That kind of fearfulness or anxiety does need to be explored further because it may be a sign that the child has extreme anxiety. And lastly, one of the challenges that can be exacerbated with early childhood mental health problems, but may also be a sign of other problems, is extreme sleep difficulties that don't respond to primary care interventions, so recommendations of sleeping in a quiet place, having a routine, those kinds of things. If a child doesn't have a positive response to those, it's very stressful for parents, and they may need a little bit of extra support to think about what strategies might be helpful or why the child's having so much trouble sleeping.
If a parent is worried about any of these issues, what are some of the first steps they should take?
Generally, the first step is to talk with their primary care pediatrician or other primary care provider. These are obviously people who know what typical development is and often can reassure a parent that the child's on a healthy track but maybe experiencing some minor bumps. On the other hand, primary care providers are also skilled at identifying children who might need further evaluation or assessment. Other professionals who can be helpful are child care providers who see all sorts of children in a range of developmental paths, and parents can also seek out the assistance of early intervention who have a range of specialties including mental health, speech, language, occupational therapy, and can seek out mental health providers, particularly looking for mental health providers who have early childhood experience.
Do you have any final advice for parents?
I think one of the key ingredients for young children's emotional and behavioral well-being is making sure that parents and children have opportunities to enjoy each other, to interact or play, that are really focused on just the child. And these can be as little as 5 minutes a day. But those kinds of opportunities help a child to know that they're important in their parent's life and help a parent to feel competent.